afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really glad you tuned in today because it is that day. It's that time again. Every single month, we have our good friend Dr. Troy on the show for Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. We are on hour two, taking your questions. They're fantastic. We do this because, you know, the Live the Promise show, if you listen often enough, it's a deeper life show. It's deeper life in Christ, powerful life on earth. And underneath it all, I mean, so many of us live with health issues, and as if we kind of try to compartmentalize our faith. But you got to know God cares about your health, and He truly, truly wants you well. And there are things that we can do, tweaks we can make that could make a world of a difference in our health. So Dr. Troy is so generous with his time to come in studio every month to answer your questions. This is his heartbeat. This is what he wants. He's giving us his time, and we just honor him so, so much. He's from Synapse. He's founder of Synapse Center for Health and Healing, located in Eagan in Minnesota. And we, will, as always, will link up his practice on the show page today, 877-933-2484. It's a toll-free number. Call with your questions. Pam's checking in from Duluth. Pam, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hey.
Jeez, thanks for being there. You guys give me so much hope. I recently was diagnosed with a vestibular disorder with vestibular migraines. And the treatment thus far, I've had an MRI, I've had a CAT scan, I've had a test called a VNG where they do a lot of ear things, put water in your ear, turn you this way, and then I've had one other thing where they put me in a room and they spin you around. So I've had quite a bit of extensive testing, and the results were as I said. And what I've been trying to do to deal with it is they offered that I should stay on a low salt diet, to high doses of magnesium, which for me causes extreme loose balls. So I quit that about 3 weeks ago. I haven't taken it any longer. I also have some hearing loss in my left ear from some nerve damage. The doctor, the ENT guy, said it was probably from a virus. I don't eat a lot of red meat. I do keep a low salt diet. Once in a while, with my job, I work full-time, and there's a lot of stress there. I might take a half of Ativan once in a while, and that kind of helps me bring down my stress level, which my symptoms decrease sometimes with that. So I'm wondering, what else can I do? What does Dr. Troy think?
Thanks so much, Pam.
Well, there's actually quite a bit you can do with vestibular challenges. If they've kind of ruled out different scenarios with the crystals and the different they do the Apley's maneuver and stuff where they kind of put your head in different positions trying to get the crystals out. The vestibular part of the brain gets our signals from our head position and also is influenced heavily by an area of the brain called the cerebellum that deals with our coordination of thought, physical movement, and all memory. So stress can play a role into that. It's one of those things, I'm going to have to unfortunately say a very general statement here, but it's good to decrease your overall mental, chemical, and physical stress. And so with vestibular in particular, there's usually one side that dominates over the other side. So functionally, we want to look at things, the body, a little differently. For example, the last caller talked about blood pressure. We'll use blood pressure as an example. When you have a vestibular problem, we take the blood pressure on the right arm and the left arm. If there's a difference, then we know the nerves are firing at a different rate. And so you can use that as an indicator as to what's working for you, what's working against you. So when you get your blood pressure taken, it's important to get it on both the left and the right. And that's actually true for everyone because if there's a difference, it means that the nerves are not regulating things properly. So if your blood pressure is different from side to side, even more than 8-9 points, then we know it's the nerve firing that's causing the vestibular problem. Now, if that's the case and it's a cerebellar problem, the nerves aren't firing properly, then anything from digestive dysfunction or things that cause tension in your muscles on one side versus the other can cause it. So unfortunately, I can't give you very specifics until we have specific information. But there's a lot you can do. It's just for vestibular problems, it has to be unique to the individual. So most times what we find is there's something that's stuck. And what I mean by that is there's some neurologic signal that is continually sending feedback back to one side of the brain but not the other side. And then we get these vestibular problems. It can be something as simple as a muscle spasm, an injury on one side of the body. It can be a spasm in the intestinal tract. It can be a low-grade infection that you didn't know was there. There's a sinus or nasal infection called Marcon's, and you can get the test for that. That's Marcons. And if you have that, that's a fungal or an antibiotic-resistant strain that can also cause these types of problems. So it's unique to the individual. Almost always, about 80% of the time, we find it is a brain problem on one side versus the other. And someone who's trained in functional neurology can look at that. They'll look at your eyes, and one pupil might be bigger than the other. The blood pressure, like I said, will be higher on one side of the body versus the other side. Unless you have two hearts, you only have one heart, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't throw those curveballs in there.
Yeah. Do you see success ever in dealing with someone with this issue?
Almost always.
Wow.
Vestibular and vertigo type scenarios, we're pretty much batting 1,000 with that.
Wow.
So it's something that's with someone that really knows what they're doing as far as assessing the little sides, the little signs. It's a bit of a process sometimes, but you can help get them out of that. And your doctors are exactly right as far as the diet and the salt component to it. So sometimes decreasing the pressure in the body, healthy weight loss is needed sometimes, but it's unique to the individual. So that's why it's a little challenging to give you specific information, but there is a lot that you can do to correct that. So find someone who does functional neurology where they measure things. And I know you've done this test in my clinic, Susie, but where we close the eyes and have them march in place. If you close your eyes, don't do this at home unless you have someone with you, but if you close your eyes and you fall over, the side you tend to fall to is usually the side of the cerebellum that needs the support and help. And then you have to do different things to try and stimulate those nerves. There's going to be something, though, that will have triggered this whole thing. And it can be something as simple as a spasm in the jaw that you didn't know was there, or in a hip or something along those lines. And that influences the nerves that then sets up the problem in the vestibular system. And there could be a retraining process, but there's an answer there. I know I didn't give you the exact
but there's
do
hope.
This. There's definitely hope because, there's a lot of good people I know just here in the cities that have a lot of success with vestibular challenges. And if your physical therapist and the doctors you're working with are getting some progress with the tilting and the spinning exercises, if they gave you some of those, then that's good. You just keep doing it. You just have to keep working at it. But identifying the other stuff is really, really crucial to helping with vestibular disorders.
Pam, be encouraged. This is not going to be this way all the time. 877-933-2484. Anonymous friend's been holding for a long time, which means they're very, very patient. So grateful to have you on the air. Thanks for holding.
Thank you. This question is for, obviously, Dr. Troy.
Really? Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sorry, honey.
It's okay. I'm calling regarding a rash. It was actually just a little red spot that started on my husband's left arm a little greater than 2 years ago. And it was okay. It was just kind of sitting there for quite a few months. And then, unfortunately, it started to kind of migrate. And so we were just kind of watching it. We changed from conventional detergents to organic and scent-free and all that good stuff. And we changed the sheets. And so it continued to linger. And then it would migrate to his stomach, sometimes to his back. And then it started migrating to his hands. He's had two derm visits and two different diagnoses by the same doctor. He was given prednisone, which did help the inflammation. It doesn't look like cellulitis. It almost looks like eczema, but I'm not sure. He doesn't complain of itchiness, but it does feel a little like hot prickles if he's under the hot water too long. He's a little bit more consistent with using lotion because his skin is a little bit dry. So we're really particular about the organic soap that we use now and just keeping everything scent-free. And phthalate-free, all that stuff. And so the only thing that we're thinking that we haven't done is diet change, but I wanted to get your thoughts on that, Dr. Troy, what you think. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. It sounds like you've done a lot, and so you're on it. And a lot of these things, if they're not working, and if the anti-inflammatories have helped, but it comes back, generally that means the source has not been addressed. And our skin is a reflection, really, of what's going on the inside of the body. So it means there's some level of inflammation inside the body. The place I usually start is dietary change, even though it's not the most fun. And wheat and dairy, unfortunately, are the most common foods that are associated with that. It can be corn is another one. And then other things that can affect the skin are hidden low-grade infections in our intestinal tract or yeast or candida infections in the body. So the first place is to start with is diet and see if it cleans up just by pulling certain foods out. Now, I will warn you that many times it may start with one thing and then another may lead in there. And so it might be a food sensitivity and an intestinal inflammatory problem or an infection, low-grade infection. So a lot of times you have to do both. So it's not quite as linear as I'm going to try this and then just check it off. Like I'm going to avoid wheat and that didn't work, so now I'm going to avoid dairy. A lot of times it could be wheat and dairy or wheat and a low-grade infection, something like SIBO, small intestinal bowel overgrowth. So the dietary part is really where I'd go to next. They do have testing or tests for looking at the bowels a little bit more as far as good and bad bacteria. And there are ways to discern if there is a low-grade infection as well. But just cleaning up the diet is really a good way, a good place to start. Paleo or Whole 30 programs are good programs just to follow something so you can know, okay, if I just do this for 30 days, let's see what happens. And it may or may not. I have some people that will just change their diet and things clean up, and then other people where it just doesn't. And so, and there are neurologic disorders that can also cause this this type of scenario. So it's really important to take a look at just diet first, infection generally second, and then some other getting a sense of what else might be going on internally, because the skin is a reflection of what's going on the inside.
Interesting. We're going to pause here. I see Mary from St. Francis will take your call, and Bob and Lisa will get your email on the other side of the break. And at some point, we are going to weave in the conversation about just healthy, practical ways for weight loss, health, and fitness. That is if we can squeeze it in, right? I love all the questions coming in. We're here for you first. 877-933-2484 or email Susie@myfaithradio.com. Back in a minute. There's one change you can make in your diet, your exercise, your sleep habit. In fact, I guarantee you there's one thing you could do that would suddenly start to contribute to a better health and a better lifestyle. So I challenge you to pray about it, think about it, listen to what Dr. Troy has to say today, and just make the change. Implement one discipline and start to stick with it and see what happens in your health. Really glad you tuned in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. If you listen often enough, you know we tackle deeper life issues. We kind of joke behind the scenes. This is the no fluff zone. We like to go deep on the issues of our faith journey. Well, I believe with all my heart, soul, mind, and spirit that our health is very much involved in our faith journey, because our bodies are the temple and we've got some choices to make as far as how we steward this health, right? Love to hear from you if you've got questions for Dr. Troy. 877-933-2484. We've got Mary checking in from St. Francis with a question for you, Dr. Troy. Hey, Mary, you're on the air.
Hi there. I sure enjoy your program and all your helpful hints.
Thank you.
My family has a history of aneurysm, aortic aneurysm.
Wow.
And I was just diagnosed a couple months ago that I have one, and it's a 3.4 And I'm just wondering if there's anything I should be doing to take maybe better care of myself so it doesn't rupture sometime down the line. Do you have any hints on that?
Well, yes, Lee, definitely follow the guidance of your doctor, the one who's looking at the scan, and lifestyle is very, very important. It's important to try and improve the health of the aorta itself. And so one of the things that we generally see is when there's a family history, and I don't know if this is going to be true for you, but it's very, very common. There is a potential for a genetic defect, and it's called a MTHFR defect with folic acid, and a challenge with what we call methylation. So they do have supplements now that are in a methylated form. What that means is it's a different form of the supplement we get from our food. It's already converted into its active form that then helps the actual blood vessels and the lining of the blood vessel. So that may or may not be part of it. But if you can, one of the things you can do is take a methylated supplement. I like Metagenics has a good one called Vessel Care, which is a good name for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes helps with the health of the blood vessels. And improving your diet is always important. And if your weight is appropriate, great. If it's not, just having a normal weight would be very, very good. When we start to have any type of excess stress, we start to get cortisol, the hormone that deals with stress, starts to lay down fat around our organs. And anytime we start to see that, it can just increase the pressure intra-abdominally. And that is something that you just don't want. So you want to just be very on top of your weight in particular and your stress. It's really a lifestyle scenario. And then the methylated B vitamins can help quite a bit. Make sure that people know that you have that. If you're seeing a physician or massage therapist, anything like that, they need to know that you have that because they cannot be putting pressure on there or around there. Nothing like that at all. So we just want to protect the areas much as possible, and nothing protects your abdomen like a strong, strong core with good core strength and muscles in that abdomen.
Wow, very good. Okay, we've got Lisa. We've got 5 minutes to a hard break at the bottom. So, Lisa, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Yes, I guess my question is concerning procrastination and fear. I'd like sign up for a class at church. Then when it comes time for me to begin, I make excuses not to do it, and I get nervous. Mm-hmm. Then when the time passes for the class to begin, I'm kicking myself, sign up for a gym, times come. I back out because of fear procrastination. What is that? Is it fear procrastination? How do I overcome that?
That's a great question.
I love her for asking this, and I love how honest she is. So keep going. Sorry.
Yes. Number one, you are not alone. I can't tell you how often I see this. Number two, the reason why you're not alone is because we all have this, every single one of us. We are born this way. It is a survival mechanism to basically be fearful so that we can survive, if you will. And so the challenge is that sometimes it can become a habit. And I spoke on this a little bit, but I'll go in more depth here. The habit that the only thing you need to break is a habit of hesitation.
Hmm.
And what I mean by that is when the fear comes on, when you hesitate, that's when the worry and it starts to build, and then the regret and stuff happens afterwards. And that's all part of the process. So courage is not anything that's going to just come to you. It's a choice and a decision. So the reality is we have free will. It's the gift we've been given, and we have choice. And when you choose right away in the moment, then that's what allows you to start to overcome the fear. Now, you're going to be getting triggered all throughout the day. Many, many people are triggered multiple times throughout the day. You can work with people who help you identify what the triggers are, reset them physically, but still it can be overcome simply by acknowledging and choosing that you're going to do it. Because the reality is, you've probably done this a couple times where you had fear of going out to partake in maybe a study group or something like that. And then you did it and you thought, oh, I'm so glad I did. I feel so good. That's basically how it works. I used to have a fear of public speaking, and which is funny enough, but I'd always, in fact, the first time I spoke in front of, I was a student in school, and I was taking some advanced training at another college, so they asked me to start teaching it at the college while I was a student.
Of course they did.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. And I was so nervous because there was other doctors there that started coming in from the from the cities here. And I, the first time I stood up there, they literally had to bring me a towel. I was sweating so much. I had just the armpits down to the waist. And it was so nerve-wracking. But by the end of the night, I got a thrill from it as well.
Very good.
And over the years, the sweat decreased and the thrill stayed the same. And so it became a new habit.
Mm-hmm.
And I just chose to keep doing it because it was hard. We're wired to avoid the hard stuff. The reality is the easy stuff is really, really easy to get pumped up for. You bet I can go and sit on the couch tonight and do nothing.
And do it well.
And do it well. I'll be the best couch potato you've ever seen.
Exactly.
So those things are much, much easier for us. Now, there are some other factors that play into it. We have brain chemistry. We have hormones that all add to it. What Susie's talking about our health and how it can affect all of us, including our relationship with God. We can feel more disconnected when we're not connected to our health. We can feel more disconnected from the environment, from our friends or from our family, but even God himself. So it's important to look at, just keep working on your overall health. If there's something that you know is not what it should be, go ahead and work on that, and you'll be surprised that you feel better. I will tell you right now that if you identify food sensitivities and pull them out, it'll change your brain chemistry. If you identify things that are causing inflammation, like sugar or other things in your diet, and pull that out, you'll start to get yourself back a little bit. And so the fear is not as magnified. And really that's what a lot of us do in the field, is we try and pull a lot of those things out so then you can make that choice. And it's a little easier, but I will say you still have that choice right now.
So good, Lisa. I'm so proud of you for calling. That's big, for one thing. And as Dr. Troy is talking, you've maybe heard me share this quote, but it's just been, I've been thinking about it a lot lately. John Ortberg said that our willpower, habits eat willpower for breakfast, he says. Habits eat willpower for breakfast. You got to develop some habits. So take the next step, and then the next step, and the next step, and establish a habit in these things, and wait to see what God will do in and through you. Boy, love that call. More with Dr. Troy in a moment. Isn't that the best news? There ain't no grave that's going to hold this body down. When it's all said and done, we're going. You got to hear that whole song by Selah, Ain't No Grave. I used to cycle to this song and ride fast. I'm just telling you. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. So honored and blessed to have Dr. Troy in studio with us every single month for Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. Taking your questions, the number is toll-free. Call, if you'd like, 877-933-2484. You can feel free to call anonymously. If you're too shy to get on the air, just tell Aaron your question. He'll pass it along to us. We get more questions every single time Dr. Troy comes on than we're able to answer. So be patient and we'll just do our best. And we're just grateful to have this time with Dr. Troy. Lori's checking in from Minneapolis with a question. Hey, Lori, thanks for holding.
Hi, Dr. Troy. Hi, Susie. Thank you for the program.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a question. I actually was just diagnosed with osteoporosis. I've had osteopenia for probably 10 years, and I'm 58. And I started earlier getting tested because my mom had it. But what I'm running into now is, of course, they want to put you on Fosamax right away, and I was really opposed to that. So I'm looking at some other avenues. I'm trying to do some research. Actually, just had my appointment yesterday, so this is all kind of new to me. But I don't want to take the medication way because I've heard some really negative things, and I'm wondering if you've got any ideas.
Yeah, so some people that we've worked with just ended up having to be on the medications, and so that is it's good to have that in the toolbox. Let me just say it that way. If you want to try some other things to see how well they work, generally speaking, I want you to think of osteoporosis this way. It's a thinning of the bone, and for us, there's a few things we need for our calcium to be laid down as bone. So physical exercise is very important for maintaining bone integrity. It's got to be appropriate if you already have the diagnosis of osteoporosis. But weight-bearing exercise, you want those muscles to pull against the bone so that more calcium is being laid down there. Now, if you do that and it's not being laid down, then there may not be the calcium stores needed. So calcium is one of those things, one of those minerals that is alkaline, and in an acidic body, you will really deplete a lot of your alkalizers, if you will. So if you have excess acid somewhere in the body, your body will pull alkalinity from somewhere. Bones have the most calcium. It'll start pulling it from the bones. If there's a genetic component here, it's usually because there is an inability to get rid of acids, or a process metabolically causes more acids. So following a very alkaline diet is very important. Antioxidants are very, very important. Generally speaking, we find in functional medicine that you must treat the liver and help with the liver's ability to pull out the inflammation and the kidney's ability to pull out the acids. Now, with that, it can be one or both. It can be the liver or the kidney. So supporting liver function, supporting the acid function or the kidney function is going to help primarily reduce the pulling from the body of antioxidants and calcium. So those two areas is where you really want to start. Now, some of the things that will overload those systems are hormone imbalances. That's why estrogen and the changes with estrogen are so important when it comes to osteoporosis, and why we tend to see that happen with women who are estrogen dominant or have challenges with their estrogen systems. Progesterone is also another one, and then vitamin D has to be at a high level for the calcium to be laid down. So make sure, and we're talking 80 on the blood test, 50 to 80 is good for vitamin D, closer to 80 better when you've got the diagnosis of osteoporosis, and just really doing your best to reduce the inflammation and the acidity in your body. And you can measure both of those with lab testing.
Can you give some examples of an alkaline diet?
Yeah, so a lot of times, if you just Google alkaline, acid versus alkaline, there's charts that'll pop up. But generally speaking, vegetables and green leafies are very, very alkaline. And then something like, coffee, antibiotics are very, very acidic. Ice cream, unfortunately, is
really?
Very acidic. It's on the highest acidic part, yes.
Interesting.
And then sugar is also very acidic. And they'll have different, even in the protein section of acid versus alkaline, red meats are more acidic. Chicken and fish are still on the acid side, but they're low acid. And then when you get into something, there's actually quail eggs. Quail eggs are alkaline. So, you know,
never knew that. Didn't know there was such a thing.
They're like little tiny eggs.
Cute.
Yeah, we put them on our little tiny salads.
Of course you do.
Yes.
Well, thank you for that call. I appreciate that so much. Bob and Lisa, let's see here. I'm going to jump to this one instead. Okay. I have a severe case of ulcerative colitis affecting my entire colon. I'm on a combination of biologics. Possible side effects terrify me. I have found that eating a paleo diet helps me feel great. However, I'm still susceptible to flares. Do you suggest that a naturopath doctor could possibly get me off these medicines? I'm willing to be on any diet needed, but the detoxes that are usually suggested could really make things worse for me. I appreciate your thoughts. Thank you. And from anonymous listener.
Yeah, ulcerative colitis is a very, very challenging one. So what I'm going to say is to get through it. So it's very possible to get off meds if that's what you wish. You can work with your doctor on that. And it's possible. But at the same time, very, very much they have to be part of the conversation always, because a lot of times you have to go back to them temporarily because they work to a certain degree. And I know people really don't like the side effects, but ulcerative colitis is one of those things that is very, very challenging, because we generally find that the diet is important, stress is important. There seems to be a direct connection between having stressful events and the triggering of the ulcer, ulcerative colitis, and then the bacterial component. There might be a big bacterial imbalance that has to be addressed, and that can take years to do sometimes. SIBO or S-I-B-O is something that is getting a lot of press lately as far as contributing to that scenario with certain people who have a lot more different types of stress, acute stress. And then, of course, avoiding the foods that that irritate it, that like coffee and some of the food sensitivities. So it, I always tell people to treat it. It's possible. You have to treat the mental health side of this as well as the digestive and chemical side of this with the bacteria, the good and the bad. And it is a roller coaster. There will be ups and downs. I've never had a smooth transition with ulcerative colitis where we just corrected something and it just got better. And most times they've had to go back on their meds temporarily while we corrected something else. So and for most people, well, I have many people that within a year they've gotten to a higher level of stability, and then you have to look for their triggers. There's always triggers. And funny enough, with ulcerative colitis, change of seasons seems to be something that's there. They have flare-ups. A lot of people have flare-ups within the same week of the same month every year, something along those lines.
Wow.
And so there are unique variables with ulcerative colitis where some people are just more sensitive during certain times of the year. Spring and fall are the two most common. And so a lot of times you get things pretty stable, and then you have to wait to see what type of flare-up happens during that time. And there are many cycles we still don't understand, but the change of season does affect some people's health, and people with ulcerative colitis, for whatever reason, seem to be more susceptible that we've seen. That's just an observation that we've seen.
What a tough condition, because that sounds like it requires just constant care. I mean, oversight at least. So if you're triggered, you have to tend to it, right? I mean,
yeah, you have to tend to it without perseverating about it. You have to have an awareness of what's happening, but not worry about it.
Wow, that's really
good. So that's the challenge of it. You have to guard your thoughts. It takes a lot of work, and usually it's a lot of work in surrendering. Surrendering is usually the big word that we talk about with ulcerative colitis, surrendering a lot of what's going on with life.
My goodness. 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. We've got Ann checking in from Minnesota. Hey, Ann, thanks for holding.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I am actually calling, wondering, Dr. Troy, what your thoughts are on the bioidentical hormone replacement. I'm dealing with lots of menopausal issues, and I've heard a little bit about this, so I was wondering what your thoughts are on it.
Yeah, I'm a fan. So generally speaking, if they do the testing and they get the right ratios of the particular hormones that you need, then bioidentical is generally what I recommend. We use it effectively with a lot of people. And so it's still a hormone, so you still have to pay attention to, are there going to be side effects? But bioidentical, for me, is a safe way to get the type of hormone that we need versus using a hormone that's not uniquely made even to humans. So the bioidentical makes the most sense to me. And I like using it. So it works for a lot of women.
Very good. Thank you, Anne, for that call. Okay, Beth wants to know, what do you think of high-intensity interval training for weight loss?
For the right person, it's great. Mm-hmm. So again, you have to really look at what works for you. And some people, when they do high interval training, will actually feel worse. So I always tell people there's going to be a phase. There's a 2 to 3 week phase where you have to break your body down and then build it back up. If you break it down and never build it back up after 3 weeks, it's not working for you. If you're breaking it down and building back up and you're getting more energy from it and you're feeling cleaner and better, it's working for you. So you have to know your body and just be very, very aware of what you're actually experiencing. But you're going to go, everyone, when they first start working out, goes through stuff. When the intensity is higher like that, you're going to go through it a little bit more severely and quickly. Stiff muscles, sore muscles, but the recovery should be there. And if it's not, then there's a problem or challenge.
That's so interesting because when I was at my sickest point with the Lyme disease, and they're hauling me into the ER to get a, they put a shunt in my arm for IV, whatever, antibiotics. And I'm like, when can I do my running. When can I work out again? You know, and she said, you have a strong will. She said, it's not about when you feel like you can. She said, the biggest indicator to tell you how healthy you are is how you recover, just like you said. Yeah. And I thought, you know, that translates to life in many ways. I think it's as a measure of health. I mean, how do you recover from a conflict, or how do you recover from a hard conversation? Does it wreck your whole day, or is there enough undergirding that you can put that in the proper place? I mean, there again is another show, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, a whole show on recovery. I would agree, actually.
It's fascinating. So when we come back, we're going to talk about weight loss, okay? We're going to talk about some healthy ways to lose weight. So after, I think Aaron's processing one more call, but after that, we're going to just have a chat about healthy ways to just regulate our health, right? So don't go away. More with Dr. Troy in a minute. You know what? He takes the possible and he makes the impossible happen. So he's always looking for an offering, something in our hand. What's in your hand? I want you to picture your life a year from now. Picture yourself healthier, stronger, a better weight, stronger muscles, a stronger core, even a better mental processing, how you frame your disappointment. So, Dr. Troy, let's spend this last segment just talking about some of the let's start with weight loss, just some, because there's a lot of fads, trends, things that you might get a quick response that aren't sustainable. What are some just basic tips for just healthy, sustainable weight loss?
The first thing is really to ultimately, the big picture is find the routine that you can do the rest of your life and be comfortable doing. Saying, I can, this works for me with my lifestyle, with who I am, this works for me. And if you're hitting the health markers with weight, then that's good. So, for example, I do 10-minute workouts in the morning, and they're intense 10-minute workouts, but they work really well for me. And a couple times a week, I'll go to the gym and do my regular workouts. I used to do an hour to 2 hours 5 days a week.
So what do you do for 10 minutes?
It's basically, it's different depending on what I'm working out, but it's something I just do in my bedroom. My wife and I do it together. We wake up. And it'll be this morning we did core. So it's basically just different exercises that are challenging. We do for 20 or 30 seconds, and you move from one to the other for 10 minutes.
Very good.
Yeah, and so sometimes they're very dynamic, so they'll help with stretching and strengthening at the same time. So that works well for me because I've got a busy schedule, and I still get the benefit from that. And so, number one, we have to keep moving. There has to be movement as part of a healthy weight loss program for long term, most part. Number two is identifying what foods you can and cannot have, because you will be surprised how don't read about how healthy something is. You have to have it in your program, your diet, and then look at it. Is this working for me? Is it not working for me? Because the scale doesn't lie. There's always a reason why certain days the scale will go up and other days it'll go down. Some people I tell just avoid the scale. Look at how your clothes are fitting. Because some people look at the scale and use that as motivation to figure out, okay, why did this not work today? And, oh, I had a mentally stressful day. Look at that. I retained mm-hmm. 2 pounds of water today. The next day you wake up and it's gone, but that stress had you keep that extra weight on today. Other people, the stress of looking at the number is too much.
Yeah,
so you have to avoid it. And they gain weight. So you have to really know who you are. But but a good weight loss program, generally speaking, I'm going to say you need movement, and calories are important. If you're over consuming calories, it doesn't matter who you are. If you have a high metabolism, you get away with it to a certain degree, but you want to make sure that you are first eating appropriate amount of calories. So vegetables in particular carry a lot of nutrients with low, low calories. That's why you can pretty much have unlimited vegetables. So whatever program you're on, if you notice, almost all the programs out there, with a few exceptions, But all the programs out there, vegetables are the one thing that's allowed in pretty much all of them. Not all of them, but most. So it's important to be consistently eating the same at the same times and the same types of foods. So generally speaking, we want to keep these foods low glycemic. So other than calories, low glycemic, which means they don't spike our blood sugar. If you can avoid foods that spike our blood sugar, now that doesn't mean you don't get sweets or anything like that, but you want to keep the blood sugar low. That's generally sustainable. Once you get down to a weight that you feel you can manage and you feel good at, then you can live at what we call the 80-20 program, which basically means that 80% of the time you continue to eat like that, 20% you can have whatever you want, as long as it doesn't lead you down the path of binge eating whatever you want. Because some people can reach into a bag of chips and have three chips, and some people you have three chips and the bag's gone and 20 minutes later. So again, you have to know yourself. So it's really the basics when it comes to the weight loss. But the thing is, you have to do the caloric stuff, and you have to eat at the regimented time. And if you don't lose weight, there's another reason. There's only 8 reasons why we gain weight. So if you don't lose weight, reducing the calories and eating clean, then we've got challenges with inflammation, with hormones, with toxicity, with a hidden infection, with stress. Those are the 5 most common causes beyond the caloric intake and the unclean food. So that allows you then to say, don't beat yourself up for it. Say, you know what, this didn't work. Why? There's a reason for that. And then as soon as you get to that reason and address it, then all of a sudden the weight will start to come off.
Very good. I remember in the fitness days, we talked about how, you know, in weight loss, in here we are in fitness, and so our exercise, of course, mattered. But they deduced that really 70% of weight loss was your diet, that you yes. did need to be moving. But people who are killer workouts and they're still eating way, way too many carbs or sweets or drinking too much or whatever, this is why they weren't losing the weight. Would you say that to be the case as well?
Yeah, 100%. And there's a couple famous trainers that were on The Biggest Loser. And I saw an interview once with one of them, and she said, they asked her, well, how much do you work out? Because you put these people through these 6-hour workouts every day. And she says, I work out twice a week. And they said, twice a week? You know, how is that possible? And she just said one thing. She says, because I know how to eat.
Wow.
And so she eats to fuel her body. Now, that doesn't mean she doesn't get to have good food. Mm-hmm. I'm a foodie. I love food, but you can make amazing food. You can go to restaurants that are amazing food. Just keep the portions.
Portions are huge.
They're huge. And you can still get the flavors of this wonderful food. But I also eat to nourish myself. I will take a shake with zero flavor and drink it up because it's got all the nutrients I know is in there that I need. And I love that. I feel so good nourishing my cells that way. Mm. And when you think about, if you're thinking like that as you're eating the food, that helps. Think about the song you sang earlier in the show.
Come on.
Yeah. And now if we think like that, if we're drinking back a shake, thinking to ourselves, this is awful, this is awful, this is awful, there's an impact there. But if you have the exact opposite appreciation for what you're doing, I mean, you're giving to your cells in that moment. It really does impact things. So I tell people, appreciate your food, eat clean, keep the portions down. And you're right, you don't have to work out as much once you get into that level of shape. So 80-20 for me is, if I continue to eat right, I can work out just that 2 times a week.
Well, you can't really sustain something if you totally, it's always abstinence, always denial. You know, if your plan never includes a little treat once in a while,
yes.
you're just a binge away. I mean, you know what I mean? Yep. The wheels will come off. I also remember, and I hope I can get this right, but it was something that to the degree that if we put on 2 to 3 pounds of muscle on our frame, our bodies will automatically burn about 13 pounds of fat on its own by virtue just of an increased metabolism.
Yeah.
So think about that. If you're adding just some core strength, now the scale will look different because if I remember right, muscle weighs,
yes.
right? But you'll have a toneness to you. And just by having more density, your metabolism goes up.
Yeah, muscle burns a lot more calories than anything else. And so fat takes up more volume. So I've got a picture when I lecture, and it's 5 pounds of muscle versus 5 pounds of fat. And it's a 3-to-1 size difference.
Whoa.
And so basically the muscle looks a lot smaller when you weigh it next to the fat. So that's why the scale may not change, but your clothes will fit better.
Yeah.
So it's very, very much the more muscle you can build, the better. And muscle will build. You have to tear it down to build it up. So these personal trainers who really put the work in early, exercised a lot in the beginning and built that muscle, can maintain it with 2 workouts a week.
It's because a muscle memory, and they're eating well.
It's muscle memory, they're eating well, and the blood flow is there. So the calories are only burned because we have blood vessels, we'll call them highways, that take all of the oxygen and nutrients to those muscles. So over the years, if you're building up muscle, you're taking a 1-lane highway, making it a 2-lane highway, then a 3-lane highway, then a 4-lane highway. So if you have a 4-lane highway and you're eating a little bit of food, the ability of that food to get to the muscle is so much there versus these people who don't exercise or haven't exercised. They've got a 1-lane highway that's got road construction and blockages. And so they might be eating right in the beginning, but it can't get to the muscle.
Interesting.
You've got to clear the freeway and the highway. So in the beginning, a lot more hard work, but in the end, it's so easy to manage. And that's why a lot of successful people, when it comes to just in life in general, will put the hard work in, and then it becomes easy to manage after the hard work. But the hard work always comes first, however that looks like for you, whether it's weight loss or just success in life.
You got to just take sides against yourself at first, I think. And you know, I mean, even Paul said, I buffet my body, I make it my slave, right?
That's right.
But, you know, I remember studying for the certification all those years ago, and I marveled as a Christian at how God wired the body to work for us. We were made to move, but he also wired the body to respond to our most consistent choices. So if you're most consistently, no diss here, but being a couch potato, it just becomes easier and easier to be a couch potato. And you know what I mean?
100%.
But when you move, all of a sudden you develop this muscle memory. Your body goes, oh, this is what we're doing. And it becomes quicker and quicker at tapping into oxygen stores, quicker at recovery after. It is a marvel. So when you look at people, some people are just wired athletically, but there are people who are not at all, but decide to get fit and their body responds accordingly.
Yeah, 100%. And our brain, I mean, we are beautifully made. Our brain lights up when we move and when we feed it properly. So the food is like fuel and the movement is the stimulus. In fact, you take the most physically fit people and astronauts, and you send them in outer space. They can only stay in space for 2 years before they start to develop cognitive disorders, dementia, things like that, because they don't have to move in space.
Oh,
so
wow.
You don't get that feedback back to the brain, and the brain slowly dies.
My goodness.
So that's how important it is. It takes 2 years, but that's why astronauts don't stay in space for longer periods of time. And that's why you always see them, too. They're on their little exercise bike in space because they're trying to keep their brain active.
Wow.
Because you push off the wall in space, you float forever.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need to use your muscles. So it mimics couch potatoes in space when they're sitting there floating around, and 2 years of couch potatoing in space equals cognitive disorders.
Wow, absolutely amazing. Where did the time go? Boy, we've got so much more to talk about when you come back, Dr. Troy, but thank you so much for giving us your time today. Appreciate it so much. Dr. Troy is the founder of Synapse Center for Health and Healing, located in Eagan. We will link up his practice on our show page today. Thanks so much for tuning in and for offering your thoughtful questions. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In just a bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program on our website at myfaithradio.com. Do remember this. The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong, and he is the one who'll keep you strong to the end. Have a great day.